to the Coco Chronicles. Black by popular demand. This is episode 11, I believe.
Unfortunately, we had two lost episodes that we just noticed.
Yeah.
Last week's episode and the week before were...
blanks.
Were blanks.
They played an hour of silence. So, if you were listening in and didn't hear anything...
That is why. That is why. I hope you didn't give up on us. And I hope that you're still listening. Third time's the charm.
Third time is the charm.
This should be what... pulls you back in.
You miss us?
The podcast.
Of course you did.
Our lovely voices and personalities.
My name's Kamina, aka Coco, your hostess. With the most. I did. I was like, wait, okay, my name. What is my name? Oh, yeah.
What my name is.
I occasionally Slim Shady.
And that means that today my name is Barista, aka... the Black Slim Shady.
The Black Slim Shady. Because I'm the real shady. So, I'm the real shady. Yes. Welcome back, guys.
Yes.
Yet again, we have a bunch of cool stuff to talk about.
And none of it relates to each other.
None of it whatsoever.
But that's okay. Because, you know, it's variety. And if we talked about the same stuff all the time.
You would get bored.
Wouldn't that be bored?
I would get bored.
Yeah. I wouldn't listen to me either.
So, we try to spice it up a little bit.
Salt on those boiled potatoes.
Okay,
so we're going to start off with our Women's History Fact.
Yay! Because it's still
Women's History Month. The last day, I do believe.
So is it?
It's the 30th, isn't it?
There's the 31st, though, isn't there? Wait a minute. Wait. There is a 31st.
Yes. Yes, there is.
So, the second to last day, but next week won't be.
Will not be.
So
we'll be rolling out some new facts about a whole different stuff for you. But this week's is about Mata Hari, who I've heard the name of before, but don't really know why I've heard the name of her before. So let's get this done. She was born on the 7th of August in 1876 in the Netherlands. Her birth name was Margaretha Zell. At the age of 18, she answered a Dutch officer's ad for a wife. He was looking for a wife, put it in the newspaper. She decided to answer that ad and moved to the East Indies where he was located. Together, they had two children together, but that was redundant. But the marriage was unhappy due to the fact that her husband was violent and a drunk and often blamed her for his misgivings. While in the East Indies, she took up the opportunity to learn native dance and customs. And after the death of their son, Margaretha and her husband divorced in 1902. She then moved to Paris and worked in a circus before becoming an old-timey exotic dancer.
Good old-fashioned.
I mean, I know prostitution was the oldest profession, but I did not know that exotic dancers were around in the early 1900s. All of her life, she'd been around men and, you know, been adored by men, so I guess it was just kind of natural for her to want to be in a job, a career.
But it's like, do they have poles to dance on?
I think they danced on stages. There was just a stage, and they danced, and there was probably some strip-teasing involved. And I mean, just seeing a woman's ankle was probably enough to make a guy hot.
Forgot times are different.
Yeah, so she's used to being in the eye of men and being adored by men, so this sort of naturally, you know, fit what she was used to. She claimed, I'm assuming for her act solely, hopefully, she claimed to be a Java princess of Hindu birth, which I'm wondering, how did she get away with that? Yeah, she had dark eyes and dark hair, but people from the Netherlands usually tend to be a bit pale.
Right, they're not particularly tanned.
Right, Indians tend to be a bit tanned, so I don't know how she got away with that. But she changed her name, her stage name, the original stage name, the original creator of the stage name. She changed her name to Mata Hari, meaning the Eye of the Day in Java. After the outbreak of World War I, her activities were halted a little, but she got back in the swing of things, and due to her Dutch nationality and relationships with French businessmen and military men, and the current, or then current, German crown prince, she was allowed to cross different national boundaries. These facts were what first placed her under suspicion as a spy. So she went from exotic dancer to international espionage. She also is said to have admitted to be a French spy, and the French at the time neither accepted or denied that statement, so she very well could have been. In January 1917, the French intercepted a coded message from the Germans saying they had gained much useful information from a German spy codenamed H21. From this information, suspicion fell on Mata Hari, and she was arrested. It later emerged the Germans knew their code had been broken, so it could have been contrived to send the message framing Mata Hari, who might already have been working for the French. On flimsy evidence, she was convicted of spying. After a trial, she was executed by firing squad on the 15th of October, 1917. God, she refused a blindfold. She walked out with her head held high, and the last thing she said was, "I'm ready." And they shot her and killed her. So at least she went out with some dignity. She wasn't crying and screaming and hollering. And
no, don't kill me.
Spam me. I'm not a spy.
Spam me.
Do it. Please, please, please. So she, you know, I feel like she lived, her best life. She really did, because despite some issues with her marriage and, unfortunately, the death of a child, she still ended up doing something that she loved very much. She got to travel around and see the world. I am sure she was heartbroken. Who wants to go through a divorce, especially back then? You know, divorces are taboo enough. Despite all of that, she still was embraced her sexuality and that she was okay with, you know, her feminine form and all this other stuff. And I don't know if she's a role model.
That's questionable.
But she's definitely a woman who did what she wanted to do and didn't have any regrets about it.
Well, I can respect that.
I can respect that. But unfortunately, you know, she got murdered. And a lot of people, you know, still debate whether or not she was actually a spy or whether she was murdered in cold blood. You know, did the Germans set her up as a distraction to get away with some other stuff, and they did have a spy and didn't want that person getting found out? Or did they sincerely believe that she was a spy for the French and they sabotaged her? Was she actually a spy for the French but double-crossed them and was a spy for Germany?
Who knows? The theories could go on and on,
on and on. It's, can you guess who? It's a mystery.
Basically. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's, and I don't know, I just thought that that was interesting, that this woman, this dancer, was also a secret spy. Like, that could be a weird kids cartoon. Well, maybe not a kids cartoon.
Girl, let's not go there.
A weird Adult Swim cartoon that you could watch at midnight. But yeah, Mata Hari.
Mata Hari.
Yeah, the original stage name. So for all you girls out there, you know, calling yourself Cinnamon Twist and dancing on poles.
Candy. Candy.
She's the reason you have, I mean,
She paved the way.
Not mad.
Can't be mad at it.
Not mad. What's our next topic?
Next topic, we're just going to go ahead and start talking about the movie review.
Ah, the review of the week.
Yes, for the movie that we watched.
This week, we decided to throw it back a little and
throw it back.
Where the Wild Things Are.
Yay.
Now, I'm sure Maybe not everybody, but...
If you have never read this book as a child, what childhood have you really had?
Really?
Like,
had.
Really and truly.
I feel like Where the Wild Things Are was a staple.
It was a staple of a childhood.
Yeah. Kamina said it was her favorite.
It was my favorite book ever. I would read that shit. I would go, I would get my mom to take me to the library. I have my library card. And I would just sit down in the kids section and I would read that book. And then The Rainbow Fish. Oh, that and The Rainbow Fish were my fave.
But it's a children's picture book written by Maurice Sendak.
Yay.
And they...
R.I.P. Rest in peace.
Yes. In 2009, they made a movie adaptation of this book. The synopsis for it is, you know, tells the story of Max, a rambunctious and sensitive boy who feels misunderstood at home and escapes to where the wild things are. He lands on an island where he meets mysterious and strange creatures whose emotions are as wild and unpredictable as their actions. The wild things desperately long for a leader to guide them, just as Max longs for a kingdom to rule. When Max is crowned king, he promises to create a place where everyone will be happy, but he soon finds out that ruling his kingdom is not so easy, and his relationships there prove to be more complicated than he originally thought. This movie, the book, too, has so much depth.
The book is very, very short.
The book is very
short. It's really short, but it packs a big, powerful message.
Yeah, I feel like
this
happens
a lot. What do you think the message is?
Well,
for this. There are several messages.
Right. It would seem to me that, and also they portray it this way in the movie, that Max is in a single parent household or some other such dysfunctional family, slightly dysfunctional family, and he is not really getting a lot of attention at home, and he's acting out a lot in order to get that attention, and you know, he thinks that where he's at, he isn't really, he doesn't feel accepted, he doesn't feel noticed or important,
right.
Which happens to
he's
a lot
ignored.
Of children. A lot of children, not on purpose,
right?
But
yeah,
they get ignored by family members because, oh, they're young, they don't know what they're talking
or
about.
Or overlooked by an older sibling,
mm-hmm.
which he had. He has an older sister.
Yeah, he has an older sister in the movie, and her friends are mean to him, and he's upset about it. And instead of going to comfort her brother and calling her friends jerks for doing that, she goes off with her friends and does whatever. So it really points out how children often don't get the recognition that they deserve.
Right.
You know, they don't get heard. People feel as though a kid's voice is not as important as an adult's voice or even a teenager's voice.
Right.
Because they're so young, they're still learning, you know. Oh, they block themselves off from youth. They act like they totally forgot what it's like to be a child.
Right. They don't. Children don't get enough credit. Mm-hmm. They just don't, which is sad.
But in the end, when he makes his way home, you know, dinner's still waiting for him. His mother's concerned. She misses him. She still loves him. And despite the fact that it might seem that your parents and whatever don't understand you, they are still there for you, and they do their best to support you and be there for you, though they fail through it sometimes.
Yeah. So there's this website, it's called Bustle. On the website, it says, Where the Wild Things Are taught us these 7 vital life lessons. Mm-hmm. So the first life lesson that it teaches us, it says, don't judge someone by or something by his or her appearance.
Yes. These wild things look scary and they're loud and, you know, they threaten to eat him.
Yeah, when they first met him, they're like, you know what? You don't look like us. We're just going to eat you.
Yeah, like, you, what are you even doing here? Who are you?
You don't belong here.
You know? And what happened there was not only were the wild things judging Max because he's this little thing, so how could he be important? But Max, I think, kind of judged the wild things. He was trying to, you know, jump in and help this one guy who was destroying their homes, which Max didn't know at the time. He just thought he was being helpful. So he was like, oh, you know, I'm gonna jump in here and help them out and it'll be great. So he misjudged that, definitely.
Definitely.
And then they misjudged him. You know, it's really an important lesson of just because someone acts a certain way or looks a certain way doesn't mean that they're confined by what you believe those things to be or to mean.
Which is why it's important to start kids off at a young age to not judge others and to be more accepting.
Which, talking about the characters and the way they looked, I thought that the costuming that they did for the characters was really
It was spot on. If you look at the movie and the way the characters look, they look just like the
picture
book.
Book characters.
Just like them.
Yeah. And it's just was really cool to me. I couldn't figure out how they did it so well. I think, what'd you say they did with the faces?
It's like the faces were CGI and then they actually had like the actors be on like stilts and stuff to make them look giant and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, the faces were CGI. And they were spot on.
Yeah, the way that they did it, I couldn't tell where the CGI began.
Right.
And the costume ended, you know?
The mouths were wide, the teeth were sharp, the claws were spot on.
Yes.
Fur and hair everywhere. They did look like wild
things.
Scary monsters.
Yeah, it looks like wild things. The second lesson that we are taught, it says, is there's a wild thing in all of us, and that's okay.
It's okay.
A lot of people suppress their urges and their inner desires to do something because they think, oh, well, you know, I've been told that this is going to look silly or I'm going to look stupid doing this or it's weird or it's not conventional, but sometimes it's okay to be that way.
It's okay to be different.
Yes.
And unique. On the website, it says, in various interviews and appearances, Sendak has always maintained that it's okay for everyone, like Max, to have a little bit of a wild thing in them. It's what makes you human. Again, like Max, he sees children as finding a release for their wildness through their vivid imaginations. But it's a lesson we as adults could remember.
And that's extremely true. A lot of adults, at a certain age, in their teens, and sometimes as late as the early 20s, they just lose their creativity and imagination.
All together.
Because we are all being fed that it's not vital to have an imagination or necessary as an adult to have an imagination. And I think that that's totally not true, especially if you want to have kids. How are you going to pretend with your kid when you don't have
an imagination? You don't even know how to pretend.
The only thing you know how to pretend is, like, you paid your bills on time. And that's just denial. So it's good. I still have a vivid imagination. I'm going to try to keep having a wild imagination until the day I die because
it's what keeps us
young. In a sense. Yeah. It keeps me from being too grown up, you know, and serious. Some people take things too seriously.
Too seriously. Like, I can't. The third lesson that the movie teaches us, and the book, is that there is immense power in imagination.
So it's along the same lines.
The same lines.
The last one.
Again, Sendak says that children do live in fantasy and reality. They move back and forth very easily in a way that most adults can no longer remember how to do.
Yes.
So again, with what we were just talking about, as we get older, unfortunately, we don't.
Our imagination starts
to dwindle.
When we imagine, you know, what we're going to do on the weekend instead of fighting dragons or going on an adventure, we're fighting nausea because we got hungover.
Right.
Before, you know, I'm imagining that I'm not going to get shit-faced this weekend. But it's not stuff that's really creative or fun. You imagine yourself going home at the end of the day to have a glass of wine and relax instead of thinking, oh man, when I get home, I'm gonna, you know,
build a fort.
Yes.
And pretend the floor is lava.
Right. Who doesn't love that?
Right.
The floor is lava.
The floor is lava.
So it's, I think, really, obviously, a big thing that he's trying to say is adults lose themselves in being adults.
We do. Innocence is lost and gone.
And all of your the things that you loved and made you light and happy and kept you from being weighed down with life's troubles have been forgotten because you've been trained to forget them as an adult.
Yeah. Very true. And very depressing to think about.
It is. The next lesson is there's always time in life to let loose. And I don't mean the aforementioned getting shit-faced on the weekend.
Yeah, that doesn't do anything for you.
That is not what I mean. In the movie, Max, you know, tells the wild, his first order as king is to let the wild
rumpus start. whatever that means. I don't know.
But basically, it's just like to let loose and go wild and stop worrying about what other people think about what you're doing and just do something crazy that makes you happy. You know, go skydiving. Go.
Drive Mario Karts in the middle of the street in Tokyo, if you live in Japan.
Go make mud monsters with your kids or whatever people with children do.
I don't know. Just
do something that is unorthodox? Yes. Do something unorthodox.
I use the big word. I don't know how to spell it, but...
It could be anything that kind of makes you uncomfortable, but has that childlike frivolity attached to it. You know, don't be so focused on, well, I shouldn't do this because, or, you know, if you feel like doing something crazy and fun that doesn't hurt people,
right,
do it. Do it.
Which, by the way, I'm so glad we started talking about this because this weekend I was like, you know what, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to probably relax, but there's an opportunity to volunteer at a bounce house for adults. And at first I wasn't going to do it, but now just talking about being creative and doing silly shit, I'm going to do it
so
I can go and have fun and do some childlike nonsense.
Right, because everyone needs that outlet sometimes. Like, that's why people get stressed and lash out at people is because they don't have an outlet. Where their outlet is self-destructive, like smoking or drinking.
Right, that stuff's not... I know people who do that like every day or every weekend. It's just, it's just, come on, guys, get it together. Every once in a while is fine, but yeah, that's not the kind of wild you want. You don't want your liver to be as black as
your soul.
My soul, yes. Yes. the number fifth lesson it teaches us is sometimes there's no place like home.
Yeah.
In the movie, Max was like, making plans to, like, I guess, stay there forever. He's like, yeah, we can build this, and we can build that, and we can do this and that. But as time goes on, he's like, man, I miss my mom, I miss my sister, I miss my home.
You know, there's something about, unless you came from an extremely abusive and painful home, there's something about going home. Sometimes I have moments where I do get homesick. I'm like, oh, man, I wish I was with my mom right now, or I really want to see my grandma, I miss my cousins, I miss my dad, and it sucks, because I'm down here, yes, I'm happy where I'm at doing my own thing, but, you know, I miss my family. There are certain places that I miss going in Ohio that I can't go here. I miss my best friend from Cleveland, Tamika, I love you, you know, I miss doing all of these things that I used to, but I also,
Well, I also think you can make new homes for yourself.
Right, you can make new homes for yourself.
Yeah, and like Marissa was saying, there sometimes I catch myself, I'm like, man, I miss my family. Even though me and my family aren't particularly close, I'm like, there's things that I do or say, and I'm like, I think of my mom, and I'm like, oh, I miss my mom.
Oh, man.
I haven't seen her in a while. So yeah, even though I'm also happy to be doing my own thing, I know where my home is, my real home, where I was born.
Right, and it's, nothing compares.
Nothing.
To going home.
It doesn't.
You can make new homes, and you will love those homes, and you want to stay there.
But however.
Nothing compares to making that yearly holiday visit, or whatever, to your family's house, and getting all together, and you might be stressed or complain about it, but in the end, you're like, you know what?
You're glad you went.
This was good. I got to see my family. I got to see my people.
Yep.
The sixth life lesson that we learn from Where the Wild Things Are is that your parents, as I mentioned earlier, your parents will always have your back,
even if it doesn't
seem like it.
No matter what.
Max imagined a world of wild things because his mother sent him to bed without supper when he was misbehaving. But what was waiting for him when he got back home? His dinner still hot.
Hot and fresh.
Like a Subway sandwich. Like a
Subway sandwich. So even though his mom sent him to bed because she was pissed he was misbehaving.
Yeah, he acted out.
She still thought of him and still kept his dinner.
Yeah.
Hot and fresh for him.
Most parents are not so cruel that they're legitimately going to lock you in the room like
without feeding you.
Don't eat. You know, one parent will feel bad and give you some food, or they'll go up there after like an hour and be like, have you calmed down?
Well, checking on you.
Are you hungry? Come down and eat real quick. You know? So
that's something my mom would do.
Yeah. Like they understand. Though sometimes they do really get caught up in being an adult, they understand.
They do.
That
adulting's hard, but we were all kids once.
Right. That, well, it's not okay that you acted out, but I understand you threw this tantrum. You've had your punishment. I'm not going to keep you on punishment forever. Now that you've calmed down, and hopefully you've seen the errors of your way, come back out. I don't hate you. I'm not going to, you know, punish you for the rest of your life. I love you, and I'm going to take care of you. Eat this dinner. I'm so mad at you.
I'll forgive you, but I won't forget. So, the last and final lesson that the movie taught us is love with everything you've got.
Which is easier said than done.
Well, for some.
I think. I feel like it's easier when you're a child to love with all of you because you don't have those barriers set up that time and, you know, disappointment build in a lot of adults.
That's true.
And so it's hard. Yes, I love people, but usually the people that I love are in my family or really close friends. I have issues with loving people.
Same.
You know what I mean?
Relatable.
So it's, and I feel like that's good to remember. Yes, you're gonna get hurt sometimes when you put yourself out there, or it's not gonna go how you expect, but that doesn't mean you should stop loving.
Right.
You shouldn't become
a heartless, cold,
hard-hearted,
dementor,
lax-old people like us. It's really important to still be able to say, you know, yes, I got hurt, and I'm going to be more cautious in the future.
Right, nothing wrong with caution.
About the people I let into my life, but that's not going to keep me from being open to the idea of loving new people.
Yes, like the Grinch. It's the perfect Grinch. I was telling Marissa the other day.
She had a Grinch moment.
I had a Grinch moment, like, you know. My heart was three sizes too small. And then something happened.
And it just grew. It broke.
And then that frown that he had turned upside down into a big old smile. And then his heart warmed. And he was human again.
And he was singing with the Who's. she was singing with the Who's.
I had a moment. I want to read this, though. Underneath that life lesson that it said that it taught us, you know, love with everything you've got. Mm-hmm. It says, the wild things love Max so greatly and so desperately, they expressed it in the biggest and only way they knew how, which was to eat him up. Maurice Sendak himself was entirely charmed by this idea, the idea to love big and uniquely as children and wild things would. Mm-hmm. He says, and I quote, once a little boy sent me a charming card with a little drawing on it. I loved it. I answer all of my children's letters, sometimes very hastily, but this one I lingered over. I sent him a card, and I drew a picture of a wild thing on it. I wrote, Dear Jim, I loved your card. Then I got a letter back from his mother, and she said, Jim loved your card so much, he ate it. That, to me, was one of the highest compliments I've ever received. He didn't care that it was an original Maurice Sendak drawing or anything. He saw it, he loved it, and then he ate it.
Which, I think the reason that eating something is like such a strong compliment, I guess, is because You love this thing so much that you want it to be a part of
right.
it.
Right, so then you digest it.
And how else can you do that? I mean, a little boy's not going to get a tattoo. So, so you know, you love this thing so much that you make it a part of yourself, in a sense. You literally pull it into yourself and become one with the thing that you love. I don't suggest eating your loved ones.
I don't suggest doing that. That could take a very dark turn.
Then they won't be around for you to spend time with, and you'll probably go to jail for cannibalism, manslaughter, all sorts of things.
Don't do that.
Don't literally eat your family. But
metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically, eat it up. When someone tells you something, or they give you something, or they share something that's important to them with you, eat that shit up. You know, pay attention, wholeheartedly be there for them, and be in that moment, and make it one with yourself, and show a genuine interest in it, because they're trying to include you in something that they love, which I think is another high compliment. You know, I'm not going to go up to Joe Bob on the street and start pouring my heart out, or, you know, sharing some intimate moment. I'm going to tell the people that I care about, because I care about them, and I want them to be like, hey, you know, this thing happened. Isn't that great?
Right.
And when people do the same for me, I'm like, yeah, that is great. I'm so glad that this made you happy. It's just great.
When I was younger, I never really understood why people would do that, why people would open up.
Yeah.
But now as I've gotten older, I've got some people who are stone cold and don't trust a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But when they open up to me and tell me what goes on, you know, at first a little slither of me is still like, why are they telling me this? Do they think of me as a therapist? But then I'm like, no, it's because they trust me and they care about me and they care about my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's nice. Like, yeah, I didn't think really that nice. I was...
It makes me feel good
and special.
And it want to make... It at least me, for me, it makes me want to make that person feel good and special.
Right. You trusted me enough.
So strongly... Right, you trusted me enough to share this information with me that it makes me feel comfortable sharing the similar things with you. Because... Right. I know that you'll appreciate them because you know that I'll appreciate them. So it's just cool.
It is cool.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
In closing,
Where the Wild Things Are, yes, it's a children's book, but it's, according to what Maurice Sendak said, illuminated not only the protagonist Max's imagination, but also his rage. Mm-hmm. A reaction to a mother's emotional absence and the overall darker and neglected parts of a child's psyche. So this movie, or this book, which is the movie, is just really kind of a wake-up
call
for adults. I mean, yes, it's a children's book, and when I was a child, of course, I didn't think about the child having darker psyche. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like thinking back, damn, yeah, man, he was going through some stuff.
Yeah,
he wanted to be heard and seen, and he wanted some love and attention, and you know, it's not really his mother's fault because she's a single mother doing her thing, but you know, still, it's your child and you still need to acknowledge him somewhat. So yeah, it's just a really good book and a good movie, and it's just got some good life lessons.
Yeah, educational, which I like when a kid's movie slash book is educational.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like a Disney movie. It's not only for kids.
It's for adults.
It's for adults, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that was our movie review for this week. Where the Wild Things Are.
And since we feel comfortable with this new thing that we've rolled out, the movie review, we're going to keep it.
We're going to
roll out another new segment for the show.
Yes.
Where
disappear.
Yes, where we cover unsolved mysteries.
Disappearances, because we're really into that.
Yeah, we're kind of morbid people, as bright and sunshiny as we are.
Or we try to be.
We're really quite morbid people. So we're going to do an unsolved mysteries section. I guess segment, I mean,
dun, dun.
The, the podcast.
How does it go at the beginning? I can never remember the whole. I used to be able to remember the whole beginning.
It's good. What show is it? Law and Order.
Law and Order, yeah.
That's not something we came up with.
These are their stories. Dun, dun. Damn it.
Oh, that's the special victims.
Oh, that's the only. Yeah. That's the only good one. That's SVU.
So this week's unsolved mystery is the disturbing, unexplained mystery of the Jameson family disappearance. Yes.
And it is a doozy.
So this family, back in October of 2009, Bobby, Shirlene, and their 6-year-old daughter, Madison, went missing in Red Oak Mountain area in Oklahoma. Over 100 people were enlisted to search for the Jameson family, but no sign of them was found until November of 2013, when the skeletal remains of 2 adults and a child were found in the woods face down and side by side, roughly 3 miles from where their vehicle had been abandoned. It wasn't until July 2014, so this is recent, that these remains were positively identified as the Jameson family, though a cause of death was never determined. Rather than provide closure for the Jamesons' friends and family, it just raised questions as to what really happened to them.
And nobody will ever really know, which is sad. Right. I hate shit like this because it's just like what happened? Like, justice. You know? Someone out there did something. Well, we'll get into that later. Right. We'll get into that later.
And that's another reason that it's so distressing, is because you don't know what happened. There are so many different theories on what happened to this family. There's theories that it was murder-suicide. There's theories that Bobby Jameson's father committed the murders, if they were murdered. There's theory that they were in a cult, and that somehow had to do with the murders. There's theories that they were haunted, and
so many theories.
That there were drugs involved. Their dog was found in their car, the abandoned truck, nearly starving. A week after the family disappeared, they found the truck. Their dog was in the truck. There was $32,000 hidden in the truck. All of their ID, cell phone, photos, GPS. They just left it.
Everything was left in the car.
So the reason I don't think that it was drugs was because why would you take your daughter to do a drug deal?
Yeah. That's what threw me off too. It's like,
drugs make people do crazy things, but most people on drugs usually pawn their kids off on, so they give them to grandma or something like that while they're living their frivolous drug crazy lifestyle. So I don't think it was drugs. Cross that one off the list.
Cross that one off.
I don't think it was murder-suicide, because if that were the case, it wouldn't have taken them 4 years to find the body 3 miles away from the truck. They would have found it on the first search, and that would have been
that. Would have been it.
There were no, I just... Also, why is there money in the car for a murder suicide?
And that was a lot of money.
Right, to just leave somewhere.
Randomly be around.
And why would you take your dog to a murder suicide?
You took the whole family.
You took the whole family. You would have killed the dog too. And not just leaving it in the car to starve, which people love their pets. People
especially love. I'm going to be a little...
So I was thinking the same thing.
White people are very, very...
Attached to
their animals. They're a part of the family. So...
Why would you leave your dog in the car to starve?
Not willingly.
Randomly. So I don't think that the murder-suicide thing was it. But we did think that there were some credence to a few of the theories. The first one being that the father, the Bobby Jameson's father, somehow was involved in the death and disappearance of his son, his daughter-in-law, and his granddaughter. Mm-hmm. It had been recorded that the family did not feel safe around him, that he threatened them before, and that they were concerned for their lives. Right. So they could have had all their stuff in the car because they were planning on running and going off and disappearing. And the person, whoever their father hired for the hit, or if he did it himself, they saw him, got out of the car to talk to him, which would explain why there were no signs of struggle.
Right, it was somebody they knew.
Right, and why they just locked the dog in the car to make sure it didn't run away. And that he murdered them, or he provided a hit to murder him. And that's why the money was in the car, was right. He hid it in the car and said, okay, you know, they live out here, they drive this route, flag them down, and the money will be in the car waiting for you. But since the car was locked after they got out, there was no way to get in the car to get the money. And then the dog was in there. I hear it was an unfriendly looking dog.
Right.
And he probably didn't want to fuck with that. Most people have, oddly enough, an objection to killing an animal where they will kill a human.
Right.
It is pretty odd. You know, thinking that the money wasn't there, or just thinking, I don't want to risk, you know, breaking the glass. What if I leave some evidence behind? This was supposed to look like an accident. They leave the money. They hide the bodies because they're worried. And after the search is over, they put the bodies back. After things have cooled down and nobody's looking for them, and that's why they found the body years later, 3 miles away from the truck.
3 miles.
I don't understand how a search party of, you said it was over like 300
people. It was over 300 people, yeah.
How can you miss the bodies that close to the truck if someone had moved them and put them back? And there were pieces missing from the bodies, which also is why there's some credence to the cult theory. If the family got involved in a cult, it would make sense that body parts would go missing. The wife's mother said that she bought some sort of cult
witch book.
Which
Bible, that's what it was.
Witch Bible, which witches have nothing to do with sacrifice and all that sort of shit. It's just some crazy people. That maybe they got involved with a cult and they were trying to get out, and someone went undercover to, quote, help them run away, and that's why they had all that money and their stuff on them so they could start a new life. And instead, they ended up getting abducted by this cult. Sacrifices or whatever were done on the bodies, and then after the search and all that was over, the bodies were dumped because the cult had finished with the bodies, and the bodies were found later. That's the other theory. And then the third theory was that the family thought that their house was haunted, or that they were going through some sort of personal trouble, and they were just trying to run away and restart their lives, you know, get new IDs and whatever, and that would explain why they took their dog with them.
Yep.
Because if you're running away, you're not going to leave your pet behind.
And all that money.
It explains why they would have money on them to pay for the falsified documents to start a new life. And it would explain why they had their child with them. And the thought with the whole death and disappearance is that the person who was supposed to be giving them these documents was double-crossing them, killed the family, went back to the car to get the money, but the dog made them nervous and the car was locked and they didn't feel like breaking into the car. And so they hid the bodies, waited for things to cool down, and sometime later put the bodies back out in the forest, got rid of whatever evidence connected them to it, and that was it. And we'll just never know. No. But that's the part that sucks the most, that we'll never know.
Never.
It's frustrating.
It is.
Humans...
And there's just so many cases like this, and that's the thing. There's so many other cases.
Go missing and turn up dead, or they go missing
and
they
never,
turn up ever again. How does that happen?
How does that
happen? How do you just disappear into a puff of smoke? It doesn't make sense to me. What if, I know this is hard because I think they for they probably did dental records to identify the bodies.
Yeah.
But what if it was, there are ways to falsify dental records. There are ways to, you know, falsify that sort of thing. What if those were three completely random people and not the family, and they're still out there somewhere successfully living their life? But the problem with that theory is they left their dog behind, and they left $32,000
behind.
So that doesn't check out completely either. I would not leave that kind of money behind. Unless you were in a rush and a hurry and you just couldn't go back for it. Why? Why would you do that? That money would be very helpful in starting a new life. So I'm definitely for sure going with that they were murdered. Something
fishy. Yeah, there was some kind of foul play going on.
Yeah, I'm definitely going with one of the, they were running away for whatever reason, trying to start a new life, and they got double-crossed, or they got.
They got.
And that was just the end of it. Just three lives taken, and we'll never know why.
Never.
It's frustrating, and I don't like it. But I do love these sorts of things because, you know, it gets my mind spinning. You know, what if people like us are going through these cases again and they notice something weird that people hadn't noticed before, and the case ends up being solved? So look up and look into the Jameson family disappearance, because we don't know if they're actually dead. I'm optimistic.
Girl, they've been, it's been fucking confirmed, Marissa.
I mean, you don't, you're not even sure if dinosaurs exist, and that's been confirmed, so.
But has that really been confirmed, though?
Yes. They found the bones of the family, they find bones of T-Rexes.
Yeah, but that shit just seems falsified to me, I don't know.
Those bodies could have been false, they could have been falsified, so.
Those bodies could not have.
Why not? How? People do that. How do you think people fake their deaths and get away
with
it?
That's true, though. Well, I don't know how people fake their deaths. I've never read into that.
Tried to fake your death. You tried to fake your own death.
Sometimes well.
Let's not have the government on us.
Yes, let's not do that.
But my point is, she's crazy. Yeah. She's crazy.
I am.
How would you like to close out this?
Close out this this segment. Yeah. Well, really quickly, we just want to talk really quickly about Homeboy. I can't remember his name. Homeboy who was doing all those bullshit bombings. And we just want to talk about something that really kind of bothered us, which is white privilege.
And stereotyping.
This man killed human beings.
People?
Other people. Two or three.
Yeah, and injured.
And injured
others,
a lot.
Yes. He terrorized a community,
and in the media, he is portrayed as being a disturbed young man.
Yes, instead of being portrayed as a terrorist or a thug or a threat to society.
Yeah, but if it was a black man that had done this,
a Latino person.
Or a Latino, or anybody that is not of European descent. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
They would have been classified as something else.
Something else. Something more aggressive and vindictive and, quite frankly, evil.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of inconsistencies with the way that
these people are being
people
labeled.
People are treated, yes.
The guy, Homeboy, who shot up Pulse, he was, I think, he wasn't Latin. I want to say he was like Middle Eastern.
Yes, I think so.
And he was labeled immediately, terroristic threat.
Right.
Terroristic attack. But then Homeboy, who did the shootings in Las Vegas, which is currently the deadliest shooting of all time in U.S. history,
right,
was labeled as having issues.
As having problems.
Having some problems going on. So it's like,
how does that make sense?
Which one is it?
What distinguishes someone from being a terrorist and having issues if they're doing the
exact same thing?
If they're both shooting up innocent people and taking lives for whatever reason, why is one person mentally disturbed and, oh, these terrible things must have happened to them, and the other person instantly labeled a terrorist?
Instant.
Why didn't you feel the need to say, oh, well, you know, this happened in his past, and
he was going through these.
He was going through such a hard time, and this was happening, and he must have just had a mental break, and done this horrible thing, you know, but that doesn't make him a terrorist.
It does.
They're both terrorists.
They're both terrorists.
Plain and simple.
Plain and simple.
They terrorize a community or a group of people.
Yep.
And
that is what a terrorist is. I don't understand why that's
why it's so hard for people to put that label out. And some people are woke. And they
stay woke.
You know, there are people on both sides of the fence saying, oh, well, you know, you're right. This person is a terrorist, but that is great. But it's the people in the media. And
it's the media. It's always the fucking media.
People and our politicians, the people who have the influence and who put out the labels and who put out the information that are differentiating.
Yep.
It's the people who
with the most influence.
Right. It's the people with the influence and who have control over how anyone at any given time is to be viewed.
Yeah.
That are making this distinction. And then it makes other people think this, whether it's subconsciously or not.
Right, right.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a car door lock when I walk by, because I can only assume because they see a black person walking up on the car, and it's just instinctual.
Instinct,
to lock the car door.
Yeah.
Because they, on some level, do not feel safe. And that concerns me.
It is. It's pretty concerning.
Concerning.
It's pretty concerning.
To me. Obviously, not all people are like this, well, but yeah. The fact that people are like this
at all is the issue.
Is the issue. How rude would it be for me to do that to other people? Like, oh my God, I feel really uncomfortable with this white man walking in here. I just have to leave. I can't.
That's how I feel sometimes. I ain't gonna lie.
Right. I have the right to refuse. But people put those right to refuse service signs up. How do you know that they're not rightfully refusing to serve you because of some deep-seated prejudice that they have? Mm-hmm. It might not even be racial. It could be the fact that you're a man or a woman. It could be your age. It could be the language that you speak. It could be any number of things that are out of your control that you were born with, but because they're prejudiced towards them, you're instantly seen as a threat. I saw a photo where this white man was with his kids. They were, you know, had a U.S. flag hanging up in the background, and they had guns. And someone was like, this would be seen as a patriotic American. You know, he's teaching his children to defend himself. He's giving them arms training. There's nothing wrong with it. And next to it was a picture of a black man with his kids, and they're all holding guns, posing together. And it was, you know, this man would be seen as a thug, or
a gangster,
as a gangster, or some other kind of bad influence. Because, well, why is he posing in this picture with guns with his children? You know, this is inappropriate. This man is. So why can't he also be
a patriot?
A patriot, teaching his kids about guns and gun safety, and, you know, why? What if he's taking them out hunting? Why is he instantly labeled as a threat, and not someone who's bonding with his kids? They could be going to to a skeet shooting range. You know, why?
Why? Indeed.
Why indeed? The media is a huge problem.
The media is not to sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Here we go.
But, you know, I feel like a lot of the media, a lot of news stations are controlled by the government.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. Fox.
I honestly wouldn't doubt
looking
it.
Looking at you, Fox. But,
wouldn't doubt it at all.
It's just,
wouldn't doubt it at all.
I don't know. I'm tired of being, for the longest time, I was one of those people that was really PC. I didn't really want to get into debates of politics and race, and sometimes I still don't, but I feel like it is important, and being silent about it is also contributing to the problem.
It's important now more than ever.
Just because I'm not
doing affected by it. Not directly affected.
Right, because I'm not directly affected, or just because I'm not racially profiling someone or profiling someone because of their gender or preferences doesn't mean that I shouldn't be speaking up to defend people who are being prejudiced mm-hmm. or being negatively affected by these things. You know, keeping silent sometimes is just as bad as committing the offense.
Right, right. What is it? The quote is, the most evil people aren't the ones who do the crimes, it's the one who see the crimes done and don't say or do anything about it. Like, we remember we were talking, I don't really remember if we actually got to talk about it, but how RuPaul and Oprah haven't really come out to say anything about the shit that's going on with mm-hmm. their people. And even Oprah was, like, racially profiled against.
Really?
She was in, we're going to have to wrap this up soon, but I just want to say this. Oprah, I was watching her show one day, and she was in France. And she went into a store. It was her and her best friend, Gail, who's also black. And she was looking at a purse. And the store owner, who for whatever reason, didn't know who the hell Oprah was. And was, like, being prejudiced and racist against them. Like, Oprah was like, oh, you know, I want to get that bag. And the employee was like, oh, no, you can't have this bag.
You can't afford
it. Not this bag. Yeah, that's basically what she was saying. Right, you can't afford this bag.
Then you can't have this bag because you couldn't possibly be able to afford it.
You can't afford this. This bag is for... Only
this is not JCPenney.
The elite. Like, you can't afford this. And Oprah was right. like, I want that bag. Like,
what do you mean I can't have right. it? I'll buy this store right now.
That's what I would have said, but Oprah's better than me. So anyway, the person who I guess was like their tour guide or something who was assisting them was right. like, came in
probably
to see how they're doing.
She was like, excuse me.
And was talking to Oprah, and Oprah told them, hey, you know what?
They're not
told them what was going on. Yeah. And yeah, the French guy went up to the employee and was like, you don't know who the fuck this is. This woman could buy your life. You better sell her that goddamn
bag. She will ruin you.
So she ended up getting the bag, and then the person who worked there got fired.
Good.
So it's like even people of the highest degree get profiled against.
Right. And your status shouldn't keep you from, you know, your status shouldn't make people pretend
To be nice to you. So it's good that woman showed her true colors.
Right,
so maybe if she had known, she would have been fake. But it's like, no.
Oh, of course.
Show me your true colors. Your true colors.
I want to see that nasty side of you. So
I know what I'm dealing with.
Right. So I know what I'm getting into. You know, I don't want to have fake friends in my corner.
Yes, bitch. Mask off. Yes. Taking the sheet off your ass. I want to see your true colors. Okay, so we're going to have to wrap this up. Thanks for
tuning in,
listening to us.
We promise to have audio on all of our future recordings.
We also didn't get a special guest.
Oh.
Yeah, you forgot about that, didn't you?
I did.
We're not going to promise it, but we're going to try to have some people. Because it's just awkward. It's like you want to have someone, but then they'd have to stay with you.
And it's also
for
hard
the
to
whole
get people
hour.
To actually commit.
Commit to doing
because
it.
We have reached out to people, and we have tried to get people on the show, and either they've agreed and it has fallen through, or they, for whatever reason, can't do it.
Yeah.
So it is
kind of
difficult than we thought it was going to be to get speakers.
We got lucky with Melanie because Melanie lives with us.
Yes. Yes.
So she's easily accessible, but anybody else.
It's a lot of coordination.
Yes. Tis true. So in closing, make sure you check out our website, thecocochronicles.com.
Yes. And we also have an email.
Yes, we have an email. Are you looking it up?
I just for safety.
Just for safety
I
reasons.
I like to have my butt covered. The email is cocochroniclespodcast@gmail.com. The Twitter is chroniclescoco.
Yes.
The Instagram is cocochroniclescoco.
And the Facebook.
And the Facebook page is Coco Chronicles Podcast?
I think it's just Coco Chronicles.
Coco Chronicles Podcast.
Oh, the podcast that is?
Coco Chronicles Podcast. And don't forget to catch us on The Culture Radio website.
At The Culture Radio.
TheCultureRadio.com.
Every Friday.
Saturday. And Sunday.
Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. And Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard. If you guys, we're going to try to upgrade our website, make it more interactive.
Yeah.
So it'll be easier for people to give us suggestions and whatnot. Yeah. So be on the lookout for that.
Thank you for continuing join us and support us and give us motivation.
It is greatly appreciated.
Yes.
Until next time, my friends. This is Coco signing off.
And this is the Black Slim Shady signing off.
I can't. All right, guys. Bye.